Police Academy is your source for the no apologies, no spin truth about all things police. Discussions about why cops do what they do, avoiding speeding tickets, or just how to stay alive can all be found right here. No questions out of bounds, no topic too sensitive. This is Police Academy. Do you understand
the words that are coming out of my mouth? What we're dealing with here, littering air, is a complete lack of respect for the law.
And smoking the reefer.
Call the dust pop.
We live in a society of laws.
Dust pop?
Yeah. No, that's not real.
This thing of weed.
Takes one solid weekend of training to get that bag.
So often in this life, we find ourselves in situations where the elements of the situation don't seem to line up. If it's a puzzle, the pieces just don't match, right? They can't coexist, it seems. We're talking about Officer Betty Shelby and Terrence Crutcher. Deadly force incident in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where Mr. Crutcher was shot and killed. And it's one of those incidents. How can an unarmed citizen who's not being actively aggressive toward a police officer end up shot and killed by that officer, and it turn out that it's justified, that the courts say it's okay for this officer to have used deadly force and killed someone who wasn't armed and wasn't being aggressive at that moment toward the officer? They seem to be at odds with each other. It doesn't seem like the right outcome. And we do have the outcome. The trial for Officer Betty Shelby has concluded, and she was acquitted. They have found that her use of deadly force was justified in this situation. In this episode, I'm going to play several clips from a 60 Minutes interview with Officer Shelby. This took place before her trial, surprisingly enough, but I think it is a great example. It highlights the conversation going on more broadly in this country when it comes to police, deadly force, and race. And there are so many blind assumptions and flat-out lies that we have bought into as a country that are obviously present in this 60 Minutes interview. So we're going to play some clips from that. It happened before her trial, but her trial has since concluded. She's been found not guilty. And I know that verdict seems surprising and impossible to so many people, but it's not a surprise at all to me, and we need to talk about that. So Officer Betty Shelby and Terrence Crutcher. Here we go. Enjoy the show. I want to start by just kind of giving a general summary of this event. This happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma in the afternoon. Officer Betty Shelby was on her way to a domestic violence call. Mr. Crutcher had parked his SUV in the middle of the road, blocking part of both lanes, and was out on foot on this road. And Officer Shelby drives by, sees Mr. Crutcher, thinks that he looks, the way she put it, was zombie-like, and wondered, I wonder if he's on PCP. She is a trained drug recognition expert, so, you know, it's entirely reasonable that she would recognize the signs of someone on PCP like that. She continues on until she gets to where his vehicle is parked, and at that point she stops to figure out what's going on. It's a high crime area, at least according to her. And before too long, Mr. Crutcher is walking back towards her. Now, I'll get into the nitty gritty of these details in a little bit because she describes a lot of this, but it ends up that he's walking back toward his car. This is the video part, which I will link to in the show notes, but the video starts and all you can see is him with his hands in the air walking toward his car with the officer behind him, with her gun out, pointed in his direction. He walks all the way back to his car, turns and faces his car, and as several more officers come and stand right next to Officer Shelby. It's hard to see what happens. You can see movement. It's hard to tell if he's dropping his hands to the car, if he's putting them in the window, but he drops his hands and she shoots. One shot and he falls down and dies. What you can't tell from the video is that the officer next to her, Officer Turnbow, also fired his taser at the exact same time. Okay, so now you have, if you missed that in the news, if you haven't seen the videos on this, a general idea of what happened here. Now, it's an unarmed black man. They never found a gun in the car or on his person. The officer never saw one, although she suspected he had one or was going for one, but he was unarmed. So this is going to fall into that statistic of an unarmed black man getting killed. It also falls into the hands up, don't shoot narrative, right? The one that's based on a lie from Ferguson, the Michael Brown shooting, where his hands were not up. In fact, he was trying to kill a police officer. So obviously this is a big incident and it got a lot of attention. It was right before Keith Lamont Scott was shot, justifiably so, by police in Charlotte, and there were riots there. So, you know, it comes at a time when politically tensions are really high. And when I first looked at these videos and collected as much evidence as I could that was publicly available, I felt there was, unless, you know, there's evidence, and which of course there always is, there's evidence that we can't see, right, until the trial, all the court cases are done. We don't get access to all of that. But from what we could see, to me, you know, someone with deadly force training, experience in these types of situations, an understanding of how police officers are trained and the laws that bind them, the laws that dictate how and when certain levels of force can be used and when it is justified, etc. To me, this was pretty clearly going to be a justified use of deadly force. Now, I know that most people who do not have that background are not going to come to that conclusion by watching this video. Now, some will, but whether you do or you don't, a lot of times it's based on very limited knowledge and understanding of these events. So I think this one is worth talking about. I also did a video a while back. I think I called it the Charlotte Paradox, where I kind of explain how basically action is quicker than reaction. And if Mr. Crutcher had reached into the car for a gun, the officers there would have been in grave danger because they could not have shot him and stopped the threat before he could kill them. I'll link to that in the show notes. But the interesting thing about incidents like this now is that no matter who you are, they're frustrating and you think that the outcome was wrong. You know, if you think that the police officer was wrong in this case, that Terrence Crutcher should be alive, and that that officer should never be a cop again and be in prison, you don't think justice has been served. You use this as an example. You file it away in that file of racist white cops killing unarmed black men with their hands in the air to boot. But if you see it from a perspective more like mine, you understand the laws that govern the use of deadly force. Maybe you have some understanding of police tactics and training and why those things are taught to our officers. And even more so, if you've been in situations like this and you've been responsible for handling situations that are completely outside your control. Cops don't have a choice, right? They can't just go, you know what? This is getting a little bit too crazy for me. I'm just gonna bail. They don't have that option. So whether or not it's something that can be controlled doesn't matter. You're there and that's your job. Well, it was really frustrating to see this play out from that perspective. Because again, right away, when these videos came out and I started looking at this case, it was pretty clear that this officer held off on using force as long as she could, and actually longer than she should have if she wanted to survive, had he reached in and gotten a gun. And that her use of deadly force was likely going to be justified under the law, not because the system's corrupt, not because police officers are always right. In fact, I don't know how you can think that's true in the environment we have today. Police officers are under fire from so many different directions, and I think so often, especially in the media, the police are made out to be the bad guys when that is so far from the truth. There are bad cops. Again, I mean, that disclaimer, I said it 100 times, but I feel like I have to throw it in there. That is true. Of course, any human endeavor is going to have those people who screwed up for the rest of us. But to make Officer Betty Shelby, especially after listening to this interview, and I'm also going to post the link to the 60 Minutes interview, and I encourage you all to go listen to it. It's very powerful. We're not going to be able to get all the clips in this episode, but especially after listening to this interview with her, if you can kind of pick your way through the garbage that 60 Minutes puts in there and tries to lead you to a certain conclusion and look at what's actually being said by the people being interviewed, to see Officer Betty Shelby as the bad guy in the situation seems completely preposterous, just absolutely ridiculous. Now, again, I know there are people who are going to say the opposite. This guy wasn't doing anything wrong. He didn't commit a crime. Why was the officer even dealing with him? Why'd she have a gun out? Why'd she shoot him? There wasn't even a crime being committed. But the way that Officer Shelby was made out to be the villain without all of the information, and even with information like the video that was originally posted that was extremely clear that Mr. Crutcher was not obeying the commands of the officer, that he put himself in an extremely dangerous situation, and he got killed because of that. He may not have been in his right mind, but it was very clear starting out when this first, you know, became viral that Mr. Crutcher was most likely responsible for his own death, for the actions that he chose to take in that incident. So having that perspective during this incident, again, it's really frustrating to see an officer be made out to be a villain when, by all appearances, they were doing their job and they did it right. And the media and our society decided to crucify them for that before the information came out. So let's get into this interview. Let's start with a really powerful comment. They played it a couple times in the interview, and I think it just really highlights, it's a microcosm of what's going on in our country. This reality that we see things, depending on where we came from and what our perspective is, completely differently.
Race had no factor in what happened.
Race had everything to do with her pulling the trigger that day.
I know one of these perspectives is of the officer herself. And to be honest, she's the only one, if anyone knows, she's the only one who knows if race had any factor in her decision that day. And I say if anyone, because it could have, and she wouldn't even know. I mean, every human being has this backlog of data, right? It's our collective experiences through life where, you know, we draw on those experiences to make decisions in future incidents that we think are going to result in a better outcome than what we've experienced in the past. You know, we have a bad experience with this type of person or someone that looks like this or talks or acts like this or keeps putting their hands in their pockets. Officer Shelby mentions that she kept telling him to take his hands out of his pockets and he kept putting them back in there.
And I said, "Hey man, is this your vehicle?" And he mumbles something. and I can't understand him. And he starts putting his hands in his pockets. I say, hey, man, take your hands out of your pockets. I'm trying to find out, is this your vehicle? And when I tell him to take his hands out of his pockets, he just immediately puts them in the air.
So while you can say this had everything to do with race, to do that, you have to ignore the fact that what Mr. Crutcher was doing was extremely telling for a police officer, because Officer Shelby is drawing from her training and experiences. And when someone puts their hands in their pockets, that's a dangerous thing. And it could be completely innocent. But once an officer tells someone, hey, I need you to take your hands out of your pockets, please. After that, if you put them back in your pockets, it's a little bit less innocent. You tell them a second time, hey, take your hands out of your pockets. And if they keep putting their hands in their pockets, every officer has seen videos of other officers getting killed when someone kept putting their hands in their pockets and they eventually draw a gun and shoot and kill the officer, or a knife, whatever it is. So these are the things that are affecting Officer Shelby's decisions. Now, is that to say that she hasn't had past experiences or doesn't have things that she's drawing on that relate to skin color, and that she perceives Mr. Crutcher differently because he is black and not white? You know, given two men of the same stature, size, appearance, same situation, that she would somehow address the person differently if they were white? No, that's possible, entirely possible. But I can tell you this, if a white guy that's Mr. Crutcher's size, dressed like him, in a situation exactly the same, is doing the things that he's doing, Officer Shelby is still in a really, really uncomfortable and bad spot. And if you noticed in that last clip, when he did take his hands out of his pockets, and there's another spot in this interview where she says he put them back into his pockets, and this was before the video turned on, and that's when she called on the radio and said, hey, I've got someone who's not showing me his hands. Well, when he pulls his hands out of his pockets, he goes straight to hands in the air. And now that's a huge red flag for a police officer. This is just a motorist assist until this point. Hey, could you take your hands out of your pockets? I'm just trying to find out if this is your vehicle. And the person puts his hands in the air, but doesn't respond, doesn't communicate with you. And there's a whole lot more going on here. I guess I'll share a couple of these clips to kind of highlight Mr. Crutcher's demeanor and why this situation was clearly not normal. There was something wrong here. Officer Shelby knew it, as any good officer would. And she was trying to figure out what that was, what was wrong. So here in this first clip, Officer Shelby is describing what he looked like when she first passed him on the road.
His hands are just dropped beside him. His chin is resting on his chest, and he's standing there motionless, zombie-like. Zombie-like.
And this is where she says that she first thought, I wonder if he's on PCP. And that's a completely reasonable thought to have as an officer in this situation. Your job is to see things that are out of the ordinary and try to figure out what is really going on. It's not only how you solve crimes and protect the public, but it's also how you stay alive. And it's a good thing that she was having that kind of thought at that point, because something wasn't right. We find out after the fact that, yes, he actually was on PCP and there was PCP in the car. Now, the 60 Minutes interviewer asks her, did you consider him a threat at this point? And she says, no. It seems that she kind of just brushed it off, continued on. She was headed to a domestic violence call, but you know, about 500 feet down the road, she comes to a car that's blocking the road, and it's running, just sitting in the middle of the road. So she stops to get out to investigate that. She's looking in the vehicle for people to make sure no one's hurt. She mentions that this is a high crime area, so she's really thinking, maybe there was a shooting. They have shots fired calls every day. She's just making sure that everyone's okay, trying to, again, figure out what's wrong with this situation. And as she's doing so, she turns around and sees, hey, here's the zombie-like guy who I already had an inkling that something's not right, maybe he's on PCP, walking back toward me. Now, when she asks him, is this your vehicle? I'm just trying to find out if this is your vehicle. He mumbles something she can't understand. She repeats the question. He doesn't answer. Hands in his pockets. And then he goes straight to hands in the air. Now, this interview goes on to describe how he put his hands back in his pockets several times. Betty Shelby explains, you know, I've experienced this before where someone puts their hands in their pockets multiple times. And then guess what? I find they have a gun in their pockets. She explains how at that point, you know, he kept putting his hands in his pockets. She gets on the radio and says, I've got someone here who's not showing me his hands. And then she says this.
And it was at that point that I drew my weapon in a ready position. It would just be a motion like this if you need to.
So what she's describing there, I know you can't see what she's obviously demonstrating to the interviewer, is basically having a gun drawn out in front of you, both hands on the gun in your typical firing position, but the gun is lowered. Your arms are outstretched so that the only thing you have to do if the decision is made that you do need to use deadly force is to raise the gun just enough to aim at center mass and pull the trigger. So it's down lower where if she's startled or you know, the gun accidentally goes off for various reasons, it's not going to, hopefully not going to hit the person that you're dealing with, but you're still very close to where you can use deadly force at a split second notice if you need to. So at this point, the 60 Minutes crew has really done an outstanding job of trying to make it seem absurd that Officer Shelby had a gun out at all at this point. With Mr. Crutcher, you know, she's already described how he's acting like a zombie. He's not communicating. He keeps putting his hands in his pockets, but then he goes straight up to hands in the air. You know, they ignore all of those completely legitimate reasons for an officer to feel like someone is a threat and about to do something really terrible. And they go this direction with the questioning.
Was he being belligerent?
No.
Was he showing any aggression?
No.
Is it possible that you saw him as more dangerous because he was a large black man?
No.
Now I'll push back on her answer here. Of course it's possible. Even if she, in every fiber of her being, believes that she is not a racist person, that she treats everyone right, you know, no matter where they came from, what they look like, etc., it's still possible that, again, going back to that idea, the difference between our conscious and our subconscious and the way that we react in situations like this quickly, we don't really know all the things that go into the decisions that we make, let's be honest. So is it possible? The answer is obviously yes. Of course it's possible. But what they're choosing to gloss over and just completely skip altogether is the fact that, well, is it not possible, if not extremely likely, that the way that she responded to this situation was dictated by the actions of Mr. Crutcher and the situation as a whole? Is that not possible and reasonable? And again, the obvious answer is yes, it's absolutely reasonable, but focusing on that doesn't make nearly as good of a story, of course. Now, one of the things that was really under debate and discussion when this first came out, because there's no audio with the video, at least you can't hear her, is, you know, was the officer giving him commands? And to, again, to any police officer, the clearly obvious answer is absolutely yes. Unless she completely froze and went incommunicado, she was giving him commands, and it's stop, get on the ground, or don't move. It was not walk back to your car with your hands in the air. That was not what she was telling him. I knew that at the very beginning. So did any police officer watching this video. But of course, that is something the media doesn't want to, you know, accept as reality in a situation like this. And, you know, it still begs the question, why was he walking back to the car with his hands in the air? There was no gun in the car, so we really have no idea what his intentions were. Maybe he was just trying to get out of there. He was going to jump in his car and take off. We don't know. But this testimony from his sister could be a clue in that direction.
What we saw on that video is what my dad always taught us to do if we were pulled over by a police officer. Put your hands in the air and put your hands on the car. And my brother did what my father taught us.
Now, again, we're guessing. Maybe that did have something to do with his actions. Maybe, you know, he's not in his right state of mind. He's confused. He doesn't know what's going on. So he defaulted to what he was taught. As long as my hands are in there, I'll be okay. I'm going to go put him on my car. I'm not trying to be a threat. Maybe that's what was going through his head, and he was trying to be as unthreatening as he possibly could and doing it as well as he could, given the fact that he was on PCP at the time. Now, I haven't said this yet in this episode. Usually I start with this just to be clear, but obviously this is a tragedy. Someone lost their life, right? That's always a tragedy. And if what the sister thinks really happened, and that's, you know, that he was just doing what his father told him and taught him to do as a young boy or young man, if that's true, it's even more tragic, because that advice is good given the right context, but in this context, it's terrible. Because when a police officer is giving you commands to stop,
I'm hollering at him, stop, stop now. And he has now put his hands back up in the air, and he's looking at his vehicle, back at me.
And you're thinking?
I'm thinking he's calculating how he can get to his vehicle to get whatever weapon it is that he's going to get, because he didn't find it in his pocket.
So the terrible potential irony in this whole situation is that Mr. Crutcher may have been trying to do the least threatening thing possible in this situation, when in reality, the message that he was sending was that he was becoming more and more of a threat every second that this incident went on. What Officer Shelby is describing and explaining is absolutely reasonable and understandable from the position of an officer in a situation like this. You've got someone that's much bigger than you, that you suspect is on PCP based on articulable facts about their demeanor. Someone who keeps putting their hands in their pockets, but then is putting them in the air when that command hasn't even been given, but also is not communicating, refusing to get on the ground, refusing to stop, and walking back towards a vehicle that she's testified she didn't know what was inside. You know, some people pointed out, well, she said she inspected the vehicle before she had contact with them, but according to her, she was just making sure that there was no one inside that needed help or was hurt, or at least someone that she could talk to figure out what was going on. She wasn't looking and inspecting it in depth for weapons. So as this situation continues to unfold, she's thinking he's going for his pockets because he might have a gun. Well, he hasn't drawn a gun, but now he's looking at his vehicle. So she's thinking to herself, okay, he didn't find a gun in his pocket. He's going to get one out of his vehicle. Is she thinking this because he's black? Nobody really knows, right? Did race play a factor in that? Maybe, maybe not. But there are so many articulable facts about this case that justify and explain why she would be thinking that he was going for a gun. Honestly, from a police officer's perspective, it's the only reasonable and logical conclusion you can come to. Someone is acting like this. Either they're just out of their mind and they have no idea what they're doing, which is also dangerous and they could still end up killing you, or this is a calculated, premeditated attempt to get to a weapon and kill the officer. That is what any officer in this situation would be thinking. Now, the question that comes up somewhere in this conversation all the time is, well, why didn't she tase him? You know, the backup officers had tasers out. That means that she should have had a taser out too. Well, the backup officer actually explains that briefly here.
He saw that Betty Shelby had drawn her gun, so he grabbed his taser.
If the roles had been reversed and she had her taser out, then I would have had my gun out.
Now, the reason for that is pretty simple, actually. You want to have different force options available to you immediately. And if you get more than one person there, absolutely, let's tase him and get him stopped before something bad does happen. But when you're in the position of Officer Shelby before the backup arrives and you're alone and you think someone's on PCP, tasering them is a terrible idea and exactly the opposite of what officers are trained to do. PCP is a very dangerous drug for many reasons, and one of them is that you don't feel pain. And a big part of what tasers do is create a lot of pain, and then people stop doing what they're not supposed to be doing because it hurts too much. Well, you can tase someone on PCP and it can have no effect whatsoever, aside from just making them mad and getting them to turn on you and attack you. So for Officer Shelby, if she had had a taser, I don't know if she did, to tase him while she was alone, well, that would be a really, really bad idea. And that goes for really any level of force at that point. She can't physically handle someone his size, especially if he's on PCP. So she's got her gun out, and she should in that situation. And when her backup arrives, he sees she's got her gun. I'm going to go with a taser so that we have another option available. And for a lot of people, the next question is, well, once her backup arrived, why did she still have her gun out? Again, you want to have different levels of force available. It would have been a bad decision and the wrong one tactically to put her gun away once backup arrived, because he's already communicated through his actions that he is potentially about to mount a deadly force attack on the officers. So even if she knew her backup was there, which I don't know if she did, because a situation like this, you're likely to get auditory exclusion and tunnel vision, which means that she wouldn't have heard her backup arriving. She wouldn't see the guy standing next to her, the officer standing next to her, and still thinking she's alone as Mr. Crutcher reaches into the car, according to her. She felt, this is my last chance to survive, and she pulled the trigger.
It's like slow motion of me bringing my gun up, my finger coming in, and then letting off. And he stopped.
Those last three words are really interesting. I'm not a wordsmith. There's probably a better word for it, but, and he stopped. The one thing that she was trying to get him to do the whole time so that she could figure out what was going on safely, so that everyone could go home at the end of the day, was him stopping. And it didn't happen until she fired that round and stopped him. Unfortunately, that meant stopping him for good. How can a civilian who's unarmed and not actively committing a crime, not actively being aggressive toward a police officer, end up dead at the hands of that officer and it be considered justified, okay, under the law? Well, this is exactly how. You create a situation where the officers have no choice but to unnecessarily risk their own lives to find out what you're about to do, and you're taking some really poor chances at surviving that incident. Because as I've talked about before, the police don't have to wait for you to draw a gun. Your best option, and had Mr. Crutcher's father given this advice, he'd be alive today. the best course of action is to simply and slowly obey the officer's commands. If there is an oversimplification of this incident that's accurate, that's it. He'd be alive if he'd obeyed the officer's commands. But the oversimplification that we always see in the media today is, well, I'll let his sister spell it out for you.
So she wasn't called to the scene because Terrence was committing a crime. She just noticed a car in the middle of the road, and the outcome was my brother was murdered.
While technically true, that is the misleading kind of statement that we hear so often now today. She also brings up several cases in the past, which, ironically enough, are perfect examples of the same thing happening, where an officer was justified, was doing the right thing, and was crucified before the evidence was even available to the public.
I saw Trayvon Martin. I saw Mike Brown. I saw Philando Castile. You know, I saw Tamir Rice.
Now, the reason I say that's ironic that she lists these cases off is that they are all examples of, you know, a narrative in which her brother's death fits. And it fits because it follows along a false narrative that the officers were using excessive force, that they killed these men because they were black, and that they were not justified, when in fact, they were justified as far as we can tell based on the evidence, and that is the only thing you can objectively form an opinion and have a perspective on these incidents with. You have to use the evidence available to us regarding these cases. Now, Philando Castile, I don't think that case is done, so that one's up in the air. But the other three have all been deemed justified shootings with an overwhelming amount of evidence supporting those outcomes in those trials. Now, Trayvon Martin didn't even involve a police officer, first of all. I think a lot of people miss that point. But Michael Brown was trying to take a gun from a police officer and then continued to try to assault him even after being shot in the hand. Tamir Rice pointed a gun at police officers. It was a fake gun, they found out later. But if you point a fake gun at police officers in close proximity, you're gonna get shot. And that's terrible. I hate even talking about events like that, incidents like that, because it's terrible. It's a kid. But just like Trayvon Martin, just like Michael Brown, just like Tamir Rice, the officers were justified in their perception that their lives were in danger and that they needed to stop that perceived threat. Now, I want everyone to understand I'm not coming after his sister at all. She actually makes a few comments in there. You know, she says, I think most police officers are good and they do a good job, but she's obviously in disagreement with the outcome of this case and thinks that Officer Betty Shelby should have been convicted of manslaughter, you know, for her brother's death. But unfortunately, she's ignoring everything that points to the contrary here. Now, the interview goes on to highlight another incident, the death of Keith Lamont Scott in Charlotte, North Carolina, which happened 4 days after this incident, as another example of black men being killed by police officers and there being civil unrest. But it fails to mention the fact that Keith Lamont Scott was shot by a black police officer while he was armed with a loaded gun, and the officer who used deadly force in that case has been deemed justified in his actions. So again, they're trying to make it seem like, hey, look at all these incidents where black men have been killed, when in reality, the cops were the villains, the cops were the bad guys. But the truth is, if they're actually looking at the evidence, that the officers were justified in what they did, they were there to do their jobs. And unfortunately, part of that job is to deal with people who are a danger not only to society and to themselves, but also the police officers. And I think that irony escapes the crews at places like 60 Minutes. Because like I said at the very beginning, they're so blind to their own bias, and that is true for so many of these media sources out there. You know, I'm a media source. I get that. And I do have biases. I understand that. But I'm also trying to uncover those biases whenever possible and recognize them and take them into account. I understand my perspective is different. You can call it bias because I was a police officer. And I've said this before, I'll say it again, but I am harder on cops than most when they actually do screw up, because it gives the rest of us a bad reputation, right? I don't like it when police officers make mistakes or do things wrong, or especially when they violate the trust of the public, when they abuse their power and their authority. Absolutely unacceptable. But all the situations I just listed are not instances that illustrate that. They're, in fact, situations where officers were just doing their jobs. And the public is not ready for that reality. And unfortunately, we'll never be able to comprehend it because of the way it is covered in the media. In this next clip, these people are talking about watching the video for the first time privately and how the people in the room responded to it. And again, it's a perfect example of the microcosm, right, of what's going on across our country as these videos come out to the public.
It was very difficult to watch.
The gas actually filled the room. We couldn't believe it.
Was your reaction the general reaction of the people in the room?
Oh, very much so. We were all really angry.
Typical reaction that you see in our society today when these videos come out. It's emotional. There's a gasp. Oh my gosh, I can't believe what I'm watching. I can't believe this. This can't be. This can't be right. This makes me mad. How can they do this? How can they get away with this? That's the reaction, right? But it isn't necessarily based on logic or evidence or, you know, the facts of the case and a true understanding of what really happened. It's simply based on, you know, really how hard it is to watch another human being get killed. We see it in movies all the time, violent video games, whatever. But when you see a real life video of a person getting killed, it is an emotional reaction and it does make you angry. But the thing that we need to recognize, and I just, no one talks about this, and I don't understand why we aren't talking about this, is the fact that video is objective in and of itself. But number one, it doesn't show everything. And number two, the person watching it is not objective. People constantly, you know, if the video looks bad for the police officer and they think the officer was wrong, then what they're going to say is the video shows everything. It speaks for itself and it's objective. But at the same time, usually they're ignoring all kinds of hard physical evidence that show things that the video might not, and go to prove that the officer may have been justified in that use of deadly force. Let me give you an example again from the interview. And again, this is his sister. I'm not being hard on her. She's just really illustrating this point well.
The video showed everything.
Okay, I got to pause there. This clip goes on, but no, the video doesn't show everything. In fact, a lot of what goes to support Officer Shelby's decision to use deadly force happens before there's any video at all. And once there is video, no, it doesn't show everything. You can see Mr. Crutcher lower his hands right before he's shot, but you can't see clearly as to what he's doing with his hands. And the only testimony we have there is of the officers who say he was beginning to reach through the window of the SUV, which, by the way, was open, at least partially. Okay, let me continue on with this clip as she continues to talk about the video.
It doesn't have a political affiliation. It's not red. It's not blue. It's not black. It's not white. It is what it is.
That is what we continue to allow to be espoused by people in the media and in the public, and no one challenges it. This idea that video is objective, it is not biased, and therefore the way I perceive the video is the truth. And that last part is the lie. Because while video in and of itself doesn't have a motive, the person who's watching it does. That is a wrap for this one, ladies and gents. I hope you all enjoyed it, and I'm sure there will be plenty who disagree, and that's totally fine. If you want to reach out, you can reach me on the Twitter, Facebook, or through email, policeacademypodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. There's a lot in this episode to talk about, and I'm sure I missed some things. I probably misspoke several times, and again, you may not agree with everything I said, and that's fine. Questions, comments, concerns, gripes, bunched up, britches, or complaints are all welcome at Police Academy, so I'd love to hear from you. Make sure you go review the show if you haven't done so, and I hope everyone enjoys the long Memorial Weekend 2017. I know I'm dating the show by saying that, but so what? You guys have a good weekend, be safe, and I'll see you on the flip side. As always, do good, be strong, fear nothing. This is Police Academy.